Joan Rivers once asked, who doesn't love a knish? So it makes sense that that's one of the epigraphs that Laura Silver has used for her new book called Simply Knish. It's published by Brandeis University Press, and it's a definitive biography of this Jewish soul food that includes a search across three continents. And since I, too, have been known to eat more than a few knishes, we've decided to rebroadcast my conversation with Laura Silver from June. I began by asking her, the closing of special food stores is becoming a sad fact of life these days, but most people mourn and then move on. Why were you so affected by the demise of Mrs. Stahl's in Brighton Beach?
Well, it was my ancestral knish shop, and my father had gone there and his parents before him, and I didn't even realize the position it held and it occupied in my life.
If you'll forgive the bad pun, maybe I can draw upon the fear kashas. How were their knishes different from all other knishes?
Or the four questions used in the Passover Seder. Well, Mrs. Stahl's knishes were different because the store was this wonderful place filled with the smell of onions and slightly clouded windows. And the knishes themselves seemed to be in a snail shape. And when you cut them open, you could see this line of dough in the middle. And it always reminded me of the ventricles of the human heart.
For those people who just arrived in New York City 5 minutes ago, how would you describe a knish?
Well, a knish is a pillow of dough stuffed most often with mashed potatoes and onions and almost always with stories.
Do you prefer the potato knish to the kasha knish, the mushroom knish? A listener asks about Mrs. Stahl's cabbage knish.
Oh, yes.
His favorite, Howard.
My personal favorite is the kasha or buckwheat knish, but potato seems to be the most popular, kind of like vanilla ice cream. But I'm open to all flavors.
Is potato the original knish?
Well, according to my research, the first knish probably came from the Pale of Settlement in Eastern Europe, and I can't tell exactly what was in it, but the records show that it's from 1614, from a town called Krakowiec in Poland. That's the first written reference to the knish. And no filling was mentioned there, but if you think about potato history, my guess is that grains were probably in the first knish.
It is interesting that while you find bagels in Greenpoint, an area with a large Polish population, you don't find knishes. Knishes have become pretty much, as you call them in your subtitle, Jewish soul food.
Yeah, the knish, especially in New York City and urban centers in the U.S., has become really identified with Jewish food. You certainly don't have to be Jewish to like a knish, but it does appear in Polish culinary traditions in Poland. It's often used for mourning. The etymology says that knish is actually a pierogi or stuffed dumpling used for mourning or to comfort people who are bereaved. It's true, it's hard to find in Polish neighborhoods in New York, but there are what I like to call knishing cousins, other stuffed pastries, a pierogi or pierożki. Something like that.
I looked up Mrs. Schriebel, the queen of knishes.
Yes.
She's from Romania.
Yeah, so that area. I mean, borders were always changing, but yeah.
Now, you said this was a family tradition, mm-hmm. but you say that after your grandmother died, you stopped going to Brighton Beach?
I did. For a while, it was too much. I mean, that area was really laden with memories, and it was hard for me to go back. But when I did, I went directly to Mrs. Stahl's, because that, even more than a cemetery, was a place to conjure memories of my grandmother and memories that even preceded her.
Your grandmother's name was Fritzi Reitel. Why did she never attempt to become a U.S. citizen?
I don't know. Her name was actually Fritzi Radalje. As a young woman, she adopted the name Rydell, which sounded to me like the high school in Greece, so it was very funny. You know, I don't know why she didn't become a citizen, but in my research, I found out that in the census in the 1940s, she wrote as she was born in Riga, now Latvia. And on the census in the U.S., she said her place of birth was Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that has something to do with it.
Now, you said you would go to Mrs. Stahl's every time you went back to Brighton Beach. And then one day you found that it had closed?
Yeah. It was, there were those plastic flags flapping in the wind. They're usually for a grand opening. But for me, it was really a closing of the highest order.
And what was there in its place?
A Subway sandwich shop. So if you knew Mrs. Stahl's, you knew that for almost 70 years, it stood beneath the elevated Subway. And then it became a Subway.
That shop wasn't the only place you can get Mrs. Stahl's knishes. They were sold in delis all across the city with big signs saying, "We have Mrs. Stahl's knishes," which meant that people considered them to be something special. What happened to that?
Well, I did discuss those signs with the last owner of Mrs. Stahl's and with the distributor who would bring the knishes around. So he said after a while, the signs just people wanted them or they fell out of favor. They would break and they weren't replaced. And when Mrs. Stahl's closed, the recipe was purchased by an Italian guy in Vineland, New Jersey, Mike Conti, who had a pasta factory. And he actually exported the knishes back to New York City. So you can still find a Mrs. Stahl's knish here and there in the five boroughs.
Has he kept up the recipe?
Yes, he is. As far as I know, he's still producing Mrs. Stahl's knishes.
Why did the original Mrs. Stahl's close? It was such a success. It was so popular, you had to wait online to get a knish.
Well, what year are you talking about there?
Maybe the last time I went.
So, I mean, Mrs. Stahl's, there are several factors in its decline, I'd say. One was the changing population of the neighborhood in Brighton Beach, now known as Little Odessa. And to hear Les Green, the last owner of Mrs. Stahl's, tell it, he said that a lot of people moved away and would only come back once or twice a year. And from that, he couldn't make a living.
Were there other Brooklyn knishes that have moved elsewhere?
There were definitely other Brooklyn knishes, and some still exist. Shatskins and Hirsch's are with us in memory only, as far as I know. And Gabilla's, which was the original Coney Island knish, the square, yellow, fried knish, did start out first on the Lower East Side, then with the bigger factory in Williamsburg. And it, too, went into exile, I like to say, around 2006. And its factory is in Copaig, Long Island now.
Still local.
Yeah, and we've averted the great knish crisis, I'm happy to say.
Although it's not the same as Mrs. Stahl's. It's got a harder crust. We've been getting a lot of knish reminiscences online. Eddie from Queens grew up in Crown Heights, and he remembers fondly Mrs. Silva's knishes near the Carroll Movie Theater. He says everyone thought that Mrs. Silva was Phil Silver's mother.
No relation to me, by the way, that I know of, but this could be a missing link.
And I suspect he wasn't Mrs. Silva. He wasn't the... She wasn't the mother of Phil Silver's either. Another listener from the yeshiva up on the hill around Eastern Parkway in Brownsville couldn't wait till the knish man showed up during recess every day. They were 10 cents and were heaven on earth.
Wow, I wonder if that was Ruby the knish man. There's actually a whole website dedicated to him. And if folks have photos or other documentation that accompanies their knish reminiscences, I'd love to see.
Now, why do you think knishes are not as popular today as they were in the past? We love mashed potatoes. Other ethnic foods, similar kinds of ethnic foods, pizza, for example, have really just become international. Well, that did start in Italy, but the knishes started in Poland, we're assuming.
Right, Poland, I've sort of identified this corridor of knish origins in
Eastern
Europe. Did you
find real knishes in Poland?
I found knish-like foods for the most part, and I found a food writer who was very interested in knishes, and another one who said that knishes are traditionally served on November 1st, Day of the Dead in Poland. But I think the knish is actually poised for a renaissance in the U.S., in Poland, and beyond, because it's still a wholesome food, one that has this mark of history and something homemade, and it's a great way to break bread or break knish together.
My guest is Laura Silver, an award-winning journalist whose writing on food and culture has appeared in the New York Times, The Forward, on NPR.
In fact, indeed.
I heard you recently on Morning Edition, a Weekend Edition?
Weekend Edition,
talking
Sunday,
about knishes. Yes. Her book, Knish, In Search of the Jewish Soul Food. Do we know where the word knish comes from?
Great question. There are etymological reports from several languages. Leo Rostin, the Yiddishist, said it came from Ukrainian and Russian. In Polish etymology, I found this reference that it's the knish is a pierogi for mourning. Of course, it's linked to Yiddish, as I mentioned. So, and German, an old German also, as a food that has been pinched together, which is what I did with the knishes I made for you today.
The pierogi for mourning, of course, refers to the closing of Mrs. Stalls.
This predated the closing of Mrs. Stalls, if you could believe it. But that's it. Actually, even in all this research, it took me a while to realize that my own search for the Knish was linked to my mourning, as was the Knish itself. It was kind of uncanny when I discovered it.
And Go ahead.
I should mention also that I found out that my family roots harken back to the small town in Poland near Bialystok. It's called Knishin. And that's where I found this legend of Knishes being used to comfort mourners.
And of course, Bialystok is the source of the name
Bialy. Yeah.
Do people sometimes not understand and not pronounce the K in Knish?
Yes, that happens. I found a bunch of Knish makers in the Midwest, ladies at the Shalom Home, who make Knishes every Wednesday as a fundraiser for the senior residents. And they would sell them at the state fair, where people would come and ask for a Knish or sometimes a kiss.
The name has made its way into the Oxford English Dictionary.
Amen.
Any others? Webster's? LaRousse?
Webster's. I couldn't find it in LaRousse, but I did search. I searched a lot. And it is, you know, there's some interesting linguistic links to the Aramaic language. The word Knishta is related to synagogue, and Aknish, the phrase Aknish, is also has to do with gathering, in gathering. It's similar to the word for a broom. So if you think of bringing all those pieces together, and I think that's what the Knish does, actually. It brings all of us together, Jewish or not, New York or not. It gives us a way to talk about what's inside.
Weren't Knishes immortalized by the WPA?
Well, could you say more?
No, but...
yes, indeed, you're baiting me. There's a great story by Nathan Ozible, which I found in the Municipal Archives not too far from here, and he wrote this story called The King of Knishes about Yonah Schimmel.
Now, Yonah Schimmel right now is probably the closest to an old-fashioned, authentic Knish that you can get in this area.
Right, and you're talking about Yonah Schimmel's The Store.
Houston Street.
Exactly, on Houston. Now, just a note that
right
Nathan...
down the street from Russian Daughters. So if you want authentic food, they're about two blocks apart.
Knish and fish, old-time friends. But I will say that Nathan Ozible, the folklorist, wrote actually about the original Yonah Schimmel, the man, who was purportedly a rabbi. But yes, Yonah Schimmel's exists. It has a dumbwaiter. It has a whole array of Knishes. They're made on site, sent around the country.
So at least Yonah Schimmel's is out there to show us what a Knish could taste like. There was a folk singing trio called Love and Knishes?
Yes.
What kinds of songs did they sing?
Well, this woman, Bonnie Abrams, wrote a great song about Ruby's Knishes. You read about this reminiscence of a pushcart in Brooklyn, a guy selling Knishes after school, and Ruby immortalized him with a song about... Bonnie Abrams immortalized Ruby with this song about how delicious his Knishes were.
Well, the rhyme is right there. You've given us Mrs. Stahl's potato Knish recipe. How hard is it to make?
Not hard at all. I made some this morning. Just requires a little planning and a little tiny bit of upper arm strength, not too much. It's good to roll out the dough.
Just a pretty simple array of ingredients. The assembly is the important part?
Yeah, the dough is very simple. It's actually a vegan recipe. It's basically flour and water with some seasonings. And the filling is up to you. I have a recipe for a potato, but you could put almost anything you'd like in a Knish.
And you mentioned earlier you brought in some Knishes that you'd made.
Correct.
So how do you think your Knishes compare to Mrs. Stahl's?
Well, I got a great response here at the station. And I was trained by Mrs. Stahl's granddaughters.
Oh, really?
And yes, in San Francisco, I flew out there to have a Knish apprenticeship. And they gave me the seal of approval. The one tip I'll share with you is that the dough should be paper thin enough to read my book through, actually. Mm-hmm.
A caller remembers in the 1930s and 40s, Wolman's sold Knishes made out of phyllo paste.
Hmm. Where was that, Wallman's?
I don't know. Somebody just
someone
called
else
in
has
with that.
Contacted me with Wallman's, and again, this is great because it's helpful to reconstitute the historic Knish map of New York City and beyond.
If you were to just want to buy Knishes, mm-hmm. where do you go now?
Well, you have an array. There's an array of choices in New York. You mentioned, of course, Yonah Schimmel's. There's Knish Nosh in Queens. Gabilla's you can purchase on a street cart or by
mail order.
Costco Fresh Direct has knishes. Pastrami Queen on the Upper East Side, if you'd like a kosher knish. Russ and Daughter's new shop has knishes. Really, you have Liebman's up in the Bronx. More than I can count on my 10 fingers.
What has been the response to this book? I told you that a lot of listeners wrote in their reminiscences. Do you think that you've opened up a nostalgia craze here?
Yes, I think we've reached the knish tipping point, and I welcome all stories.
Well, I'll have another kasha.
Okay.
Because we're going to go into the news, so I won't be eating on the air. Laura Silver has written for the New York Times, The Forward. She's been on NPR. Her book, Knish, In Search of the Jewish Soul Food, is published by Brandeis. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having me.